The high-intensity carbon arc lamp became only a dull glow, and then only when one looked directly at it. And as before, there was no change in temperature or humidity. On the deck, visibility was absolute zero. Some of the men groping their way around the Yamacraw's deck commented that the substance into which they had steamed felt like suspended particles of fine sand or dust. Yet, there was no movement of the mass, as there would have been had it been one of those rare dust storms at sea. The air was dead still. The ship moved forward with just enough way to maintain steerage. The radar screen showed only a green clutter. The ship's compasses still worked. Suddenly, there was a spontaneous... Now let's go... Let's go to this one now. Am I boring you? You reckon anybody's out there? I ain't gonna go any... Well, wait a minute. Got some more interesting stuff here if you're interested. Suddenly, there was spontaneous. Suddenly, there was spontaneous. We'll leave that right there. And we'll go back to here. Leave the mass and go to here. Some of you went out and bought this book, didn't you? It is the best summary. Now, he didn't draw any conclusions. He just presents the evidence for the question that demands an answer. But it is probably the best. You know, some scientists can't write very well, and Berlitz, give him credit, is a pretty good communicator. It's well written. Atlantis, the Eighth Continent, by Charles Berlitz. Probably the best summary around. Now, this we were reading all last week, a couple of nights. The funniest one was Ed Wilson, the mayoral candidate of Orlando, Florida, piloting an open Waco with a Continental engine equipped for 12-hour flights. He sees something raising out of the water. And Dr. Brown, Harry Marshall, the Greek industrialist, conducted an expedition taking closed circuit television footage of a pyramidal mound off of Kaysaw Bank at a depth of over 750 feet. They were right over the pyramid, he says. Top seemed to be about 150 feet from the surface, total depth about 650 feet. Now, the pyramid in Egypt's 5,449 pyramid inches, isn't it? You divide that by 12, you get how many feet? Somewhere between 400 and 500 feet? This one's 650 feet. Is that the way you'd calculate? Remember those 12 pyramids spotted the Land's at too in the Amazon jungles of Peru? Still haven't figured them out yet. 12 of them, two side by side. Just a little shorter than... Just showed up as eight dots first on Land's at too from 500 miles up. Who built all these? And then Dr. Brown. He was... swimming as we swam on. I like to read this one. This just gives me the chills. As we swam on, the water became clearer. I was close to the bottom at 135 feet and was trying to keep up with a diver ahead of me. I turned to look toward the sun through the murky water and saw a pyramid shape shining like a mirror. About 35 to 40 feet from the top was an opening. I remember Harry Marshall saw an opening too. We lowered the camera and high-intensity lights down the side of the mast back to Marshall. Suddenly came to an opening. Light flashes or shining white objects were being swept into the opening by turbulence. Further down, same thing happened in reverse. They were coming out. Now, Dr. Brown, I looked toward the sun through the murky water and saw a pyramid shape shining like a mirror. I just love to drag this out. About 35 to 40 feet from the top was an opening. I was reluctant to go inside. Big black hull. But I swam in anyway. The opening was like a shaft debouching into an inner room. I saw something shining. It was a crystal held by two metallic hands. I had on my gloves and I tried to loosen it. It became loose. As soon as I grabbed it, I felt this was the time to get out and not come back. I'm not the only person who has seen these ruins. Others have seen them from the air, and they say they're 5 miles wide and more than that in length. There's a lot going on in this area. Now, you know that in Revelation 20, well, let's go back to Revelation 9. The fifth angel sounded, "We're in the great tribulation. And I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And the key was given him, or to him was given the key of the bottomless pit." Circle those words. The bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace. And the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. And unto them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. These are not helicopters, friends. These are demons. They came out of the bottomless pit. You'll find in your margin a reference to Luke 8. Go to Luke 8. Jesus is going to have some demons talk to him. 8:17, isn't it? 8:31. It's the scene of the demoniac of the Gadarenes. Verse 26, Jesus' party arrived at the country of the Gadarenes, which is over against Galilee. And when he went forth to land, there met him out of the city a certain man which had devils. Now the Greek word for devil is diablo. The Greek word for demons is daimons. The Greek word being translated devils here is daimons. There's only one devil or several demons. It's just simply wrong. The King James people put devils down, but the Greek word daimons, which had demons long time and wear no clothes, neither abode in any house but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell down before him, and with a loud voice says, "What are we to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God Most High? I beseech thee, torment me not." For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For oftentimes it had caught him, and he was kept bound with chains and in fetters, and he brake the bands and was driven to the devil into the wilderness. Jesus asked him, saying, "What is thy name?" Now this is gospel. This is New Testament. Intelligent Christianity. Most people don't read it. Jesus asked him, saying, "What is thy name?" He said, "Legion." The demons in him possessed his tongue. And the demons were doing the speaking. Legion. Because many devils were entered into him. Again, it's demons. And they, the demons, besought him that he would not command them to go into the deep. There it's translated deep. Revelation 11 was translated bottomless pit. You go to your margin, you'll find that it refers you to Revelation 20, right? Verse 3. Let's go back to Revelation. After Armageddon, 20th chapter opens, I saw an angel come down from heaven having the key of the bottomless pit. There it is again, bottomless pit. And a great chain in his hand, he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years and cast him into the bottomless pit. There it's called bottomless pit. There's only one word in the Greek in both cases. All the cases. Now these demons back in Luke 8:31 besought Jesus that he would not command them to go into the bottomless pit. Same word in the Greek. There's no suggestion at all in the Greek that it's bottomless. None whatever. All the word is in the Greek is abyss, which is a direct cognate. We got that word in English. I don't know why they didn't translate it. They besought him that he would not command them to go into the abyss. Satan's bound 1,000 years in the abyss. The scorpion demons are released with the smoke from the abyss. Now, where is this abyss? Out there in the sky? There's 200 million demons bound near the river Euphrates. That's separate from the abyss. How many are in the abyss? Only God knows. Satan will go in the abyss. Jesus had the power to simply command. To the abyss they went. In one place, demons come up and ask him, is he going to send them to the abyss before their time? Now, there are demons all over the place. Let's just go to the short gospel, Mark. They went to Capernaum, 21st verse, first chapter. They went to Capernaum. Just start circling the number of demons running around where you find them. Now, that demon was talking to them okay there in Capernaum. Jesus recognized who the real spokespersonages were. They went into Capernaum straightway on the Sabbath day. Jesus, he entered into the synagogue and taught. They were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one that had authority and not as the scribes. And there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, saying, "Let us alone. What are we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God." Well, let's see if we can find the reference over in Luke. Luke 4. That's the one. You need to learn to use your Bible. Good illustration. See, in the 23rd verse, there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit. You go to T in the margin, if you've got a Bible like mine. It says Luke 4:33. What's... Yeah, here it is. Same thing is told in Luke, beginning of 31st verse, 4th chapter. "Came to Capernaum, a city of Galilee, and taught them on the Sabbath day. They were astonished at his doctrine, for his word was with power. And in the synagogue there was a man which had a spirit of an unclean devil." Now that again is the word daemon. "And cried out with a loud voice, saying, 'Let us alone. What have we to do with thee?'" Notice "we." "For what have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth?" Now, Jesus tells one occasion, his word is clear. When you're delivered from a demon, you entertain its entrance again, he'd go out and find seven more worse than himself and bring them back. And more than one can camp out. "Let us alone. What do we do with thee, Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God." Let's go back to Mark. Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Hold thy peace and come out of him." Let's go see what Matthew has said about it. I mean, you know, all three of these reporters felt it was important enough to talk about. He just talks to Matthew about him being teaching full of authority. But you'll find that in the 28th verse, 8th chapter, when he was come to the other side of the country of the Gergesenes, that's the Gadarenes also, another cognate, there met him two possessed with devils, coming out of the tombs exceeding fierce, so that no man might pass that way. Behold, they cried out, saying, "What have we to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of God? Art thou come hither to torment us before the time?" They know that their time is run, and they won't last forever. Let's go back and find some more devils. Back to Mark 1. Jesus rebuked him, said, "Hold thy peace, come out of him." And when the unclean spirit had torn him and cried with a loud voice, he came out of him. 26th verse, Mark 1. And they were all amazed, insomuch that they questioned among themselves, saying, "What thing is this?" 34th verse, he healed many that were sick of divers diseases, and cast out many devils. Demons it is again. And suffered not the demons to speak, for they knew him. How'd they know him? How'd they know him? You see, they were around before the fall when Satan was the crowning cherub on the mountain of God. They had been in heaven through many ages past. And when Satan was cast down, some demons were bound, 200 million of them, chained to the river Euphrates. Some were put in the abyss. Some were left to run around. and do Satan's bidding as the prince of the power of the air. And he has princes that rule in this world and influence the happenings of time. That's why Paul says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and things evil. High places, wickedness in high places, wicked ones, literally. Sometimes people say, why is it that what you're doing, which is so right, doesn't move into these cities and instantly have no problems and just success? Prince of the power of the air in the cities I go in knows that his foundations are going to be shaken. He knows that his hold on that town is not going to be the same. He doesn't care that preachers come in and wrap you on the head and try to make you self-righteous. He doesn't care if all this silliness that's a shame of God and on God comes into town. It's only when you come in developing faith, doing it God's way, and challenge the very foundations of Satan, you've got a war on your hands. These demons are real. He suffered not the demons to speak because they knew him. He wasn't yet ready to be revealed for who he was. 39th verse, he preached in their synagogues throughout all Galilee and cast out devils, literally demons. Now that's one little old territory. How many of you think of running loose in Los Angeles? There's some getting my dogs every Sunday morning. I've learned to protect myself against my dogs on Sunday morning so they can't be used to disrupt. You don't believe that, do you? I'm at war every moment with Satan. He knows it. You ought to be. En route to the next little demon encounter, people are criticizing him about his teaching. He says, no man putteth new wine into old bottles, lest the new wine doth burst the bottles, and the wine is spilled, and the bottles will be marred. But new wine must be put into new bottles. Now, of course, when Jesus talks of wine, it's unfermented, non-alcoholic. How did Jesus know this about wine? If he didn't encounter the real stuff once in a while. I just threw that in. You know, he could have picked, don't you think he could have picked a better illustration of the gospel? I mean, he picked some sort of suggestively sinful analogies. Why bring up this subject if he doesn't want man to ever taste wine? Why did Jesus do that to us? His gospel's like putting new wine in new bottles. Unkind of him. On top of that, his disciples began violating the Sabbath. And he talks about wine in new bottles when they criticize his disciples for not fasting. He says they're on a wedding, honeymoon. Well, right from honeymoon to wine to violating the Sabbath. Three in a row. He could have been more gentle. I could preach all day on that, but let's keep going. Let's find the demons. Third chapter. I'll tell you, I've already flushed out 600 demons among the saints with my last few remarks. And unclean spirits, 11th verse, chapter 3. When they saw him, fell down before him and cried, saying, Thou art the Son of God. Demons know how to praise God. They know how to sound very spiritual. In fact, they led the pack. There wasn't anybody else saying that. You'd think he'd have said, "Glad to meet you, brother. You're the first one that's recognized me." I mean, I can tell a Christian as far as I can see him. Would you speak at our next big blowhard businessman's fellowship dinner? You got the mind of the Spirit, brother. Thou art the Son of God. Unclean spirits, when they saw him, fell down before him and cried, "Ruho," saying, "Thou art the Son of God." They're full of the Holy Ghost. I feel revival in the air. The Spirit's in this place. I'm telling you, the Spirit's in this place. Ooh, ooh, I feel it coming. Thou art the Son of God. Woo! Do you feel that? Yes, Lord. And unclean spirits, when they saw him, fell down before him and cried. Mascara that ran. Saying, "Thou art the Son of God." Cha 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 cha. Quench not the Spirit, brother. Quench not the Spirit. He straightly charged them that they should not make him known. He didn't even rebuke them. They were accurate. They were telling the truth. One of the few times a demon ever told the truth. They fell down in front of him. It's where they ought to be. On their face. En route to hell. You'd think, you know. Now, there might be some hopes for those demons. Think so? No, so. He straightly charged them that they should not make him known. Verses 14 and 15. Let's keep going. I think I did enough with that. I think that that's something I don't even have to apply. He ordained 12 that they should be with him and that he might send them forth to preach and to have power to heal sicknesses and cast out demons. There are a lot of them running loose, aren't there? They don't understand him. They start turning on him. Pharisees who know better say he's casting out demons with the power of Beelzebub. He said, how can Satan cast out Satan? Then he tells them the parable of the sower, without which you can never understand the kingdom. And then he comes in the fifth chapter to that demon of the Gadarenes, named Legion. He besought him that they would not send them away out of the country. So he let them go into the pigs. The point is, there's lots of demons running loose, but they were terrorized about going into the abyss. The abyss is where Satan will go for 1,000 years, and the abyss is where those horrible locust demons come from. Now, if Atlantis was the headquarters of the pre-flood earth, if Atlantis was the place where the Garden of Eden was, if Atlantis was the mountain of God, in some way or other pierced the canopy, and to those on earth at least appeared to be the place of access to the heavens. We have an explanation why that the hieroglyphic in all ancient cultures includes in its views of God a mountain. The holy mountain has always been worshipped. Olympus was but a type for the Greeks. They always seek the holy mountain as the place where you find God. And if the Bible's true, when they have a reason why so much of the mythology of man speaks of gods and human beings mating, because the Bible clearly speaks of the sons of God coming down and mating. And if Enoch, the righteous, grieved and prophesying of a doom to come as a descendant of Seth, as Josephus said, the descendants of Seth, knowing a Holocaust was coming, prepared a monument, one of brick, one of stone, the one of stone in Josephus' day, still standing in Egypt, none other than the pyramid. And if God sent Enoch, who was not, for God took him, with the watchers, creatures from heaven, to build this pyramid, to store the knowledge that would go through the Holocaust. And if Atlantis sank beneath the waves, as Otto Muck says, the rifts on each side. Let me see if I can find the picture. I'll get you back to the mass eventually. If don't today, I will tomorrow. You know, always get back. Otto Muck has a nice picture of the way he thinks Atlantis sunk. Here it is. Not too far off from the drifting continents, by the way. Atlantis, this would be the European African continent side. This would be the North and South American side. Atlantis in the middle. Some granite plug in the rifts between. We don't know what's way down there. And when the catastrophe and cataclysm came, when the firmament broke above and the fountains of the deep, it says, broke open, these plugs could have blown, Atlantis sunk, then regelled, volcanic breakthroughs regelled again, but the whole island mass sunk. Until the Azores and the Canaries and these islands represent what used to be the mountaintops on Atlantis. That's Otto Muck, the secret of Atlantis, his theory. He spends a great deal of time on continental drift that has been, interestingly enough, given some real credence in geology in recent years. And if I can find the right picture or map, because I hadn't prepared to do this, the only problem with the continental drift theory is there's a hole that's missing. Africa and Europe do not quite fit when you shove them like a jigsaw puzzle into North and South America, because there's a hole in the territory that is the territory of Atlantis. Otto Muck has a nice picture of that somewhere, if I could find it in time. Why do the eels, as we said the other day, searching for the freshwater rivers, the ones on the west side of the Sargasso Sea, swim a very short distance? The ones on the east side go all the way to Europe, have a 2-year journey under the Gulf Stream, fighting their way back to the Sargasso Sea. It's as though they instinctively were created, some to swim west and some to swim, or some to swim west and some east, but the fresh waters of Atlantis were there before it sunk. Now it's a long trip to Europe. Here's Wegener's theory of continental drift, the origins of the Atlantic Ocean, that the continents began to drift apart. Originally, there was one big landmass and one sea, which is a little more accurate in the description of Genesis of the dividing of the waters from the land. And as they drifted apart, by Wegener's theory, we now have the continents separated through continental drift, because the surface is not that solid as we would view it. And I'm back to relativity again. The only problem is they don't quite fit. When you mash them together, there's something missing. Atlantis that sunk in that area. Now, I showed you some pictures from this book, Atlantis, the Eighth Continent. One of them that's almost scary as you look at it in the picture. Let me see if I can find it again. Yeah. This round hole in the ocean plunges down from the shallow 3 fathoms Bahama banks to a depth which has not yet been firmly established. Depth recorders have not found bottom at 2,800 feet. The breadth of this hole can be sort of visualized when you realize that white dot there is a 50-foot ship. That 50-foot ship translated into the size of a football field 6 times. So put 6 of those ships along, and you still got what looks like about 4 to 5 football fields wide, and maybe 8 to 10 football fields long. And they haven't found the bottom yet. Now, what's your candidate for the abyss? If Atlantis was the seat of civilization in the pre-flood world, and it sunk, if God can chain them above in the area of the Euphrates River, which gives an easy explanation to the senseless cruelty and horror and viciousness of that area of the world that our genteel Christian Western mind simply can't cope with or comprehend. Satan's seat on earth, Babylon, Well, there are more of them that are chained in some abyss than there are running loose. I always like to start with natural explanations, but I don't rule out the supernatural. What's going on in this Bermuda Triangle, which is the territory where Atlantis was to have sunk? Can we go back to the mass? Well, but first, wanted, missing vessel. I want to read from the Devil's Triangle to Richard Weiner again. That's where the mass is. But first, wanted, missing vessel. Now, Jesus said, if you hate in your heart, if you hate in your heart. Now, some of you went out and bought this other book. It's all right. Go ahead. This one's not that easy to find. If you can find this one, Mike, I may even give them away. You know, I'm just hunting and picking this. This got some interesting little stories in it. I just hunt and pick out of all of them. I'd like to have these. I'd give this one away. But since I don't have them, I'll read it. Wanted, missing vessel, $2,500 reward. Contact USCG, that's Coast Guard. SAR, Sea Air Rescue Center, Miami or Basra H. Why does the government like have all these acronyms? Nassau. Hundreds of such notices were posted on boat yards, at marinas, and on dock pilings throughout Florida and the Bahama Islands during March and April 1974 after the disappearance of the brand new yacht Saba Bank. Wanted, missing vessel, $2,500 reward. Contact Coast Guard, Nassau. Hundreds of notices were posted around Florida, Bahama Islands during March and April 1974. I'm reading the Devil's Triangle 2 for Richard Weiner, page 132. These postings were after the disappearance of the brand new yacht Saba Bank. The vessel, especially equipped for taking out charter diving parties, was last seen at Nassau's Yacht Harbor on March 10, 1974. She was last heard from on March 24th, 14 days later, while on a shakedown cruise that was part of her maiden voyage. The Saba Bank was due to arrive in Miami on April 8th. Aboard the missing vessel was its four-man crew. Well-known Philadelphia orchestra leader Cy Zentner, 32. Elliot Cohn, 30, also from Philadelphia. Raphael Kaplan, 26, of Sickerville, New Jersey. And John Targuinio, 42, of Vineland, New Jersey.